You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Running with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We were just listening to the Hot Texas Swing Band and our friend Alex Dormont. They were doing their rendition of Hot Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. If you happen to be watching live, Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Jim, who is our guest tonight?
Who's our guest? Julie Jones.
Julie, there she is.
We got her book, Blood Follows Blood.
Hello. Oh my gosh, what a book. We're eager to get into it. Blood Follows Blood, The Legend of Ginny Sutton. Oh my gosh, what a read to kick off the new year, Julie.
I'm excited. Thanks so much for having me on the show, guys.
Oh, we're delighted.
It's fun. As we talked earlier, we got these shirts on. It kind of reminds us we have a little bit of a body count tonight.
Yep.
And some of those people, as our heroine said, I can't understand it. I keep killing them, but they keep coming back to life.
You know,
nothing stays dead.
Anytime there's death, there are skulls in the future. So yeah, if you're listening, we're wearing really fun shirts from the Scully Company that have skulls and ivy, you know, and flowers on the front of them. So, Julie, where are you joining us from tonight?
Hi, I am from Northeast Oklahoma. It's where I was born and raised, and coming to you actually from my office at work right now because my internet connection at home is not reliable. So I didn't want to risk a live show. So here I am.
Well, thanks for doing that. We know the challenges of technology for everybody. So thanks for doing that. We're so eager to get in the book. I'm going to hold it up one more time to the camera right now. And Jim, do you want to give us her bio?
Yep, we got one. Julie Jones is an award-winning fiction writer from Oklahoma, where she lives with her husband, two children, a rescue dog, Zelda, and two adorable cats. Aside from writing short stories and novels, she works full-time and serves on the board of a county-based leadership organization. She is involved in the community and helping friends and neighbors in the best part of her life. Julie's short fiction has been published by Woodcrafter Press and World Free Press. Her Legend of Ginny Sutton weird Western novel series is in full swing.
Swing, yeah. Hitting it out of the park is what she's doing.
I'm so glad you guys enjoyed it.
It was fun.
We will be talking in greater detail about it in a couple minutes. But to readers or listeners right now, I got to tell you, this is a journey through the West that you have never taken before. And it is just full of surprises. And it's a high body count, high action. I won't say thriller. It is kind of a thriller, but it is just an adventure.
Like none other
that you have read taking place in the West.
That is true.
Julie, do you want to share a little bit more about your background with us?
Sure. you know, I know a lot of writers say that they started out wanting to write from the time they were born, pretty much. I started out a reader. I wanted to read pretty much from day one, and spent a lot of my early years reading, rereading. I was lucky enough to have parents who introduced me to Heinlein and Asimov, and you know, I read a lot of Robert Jordan when I was growing up. And when I got to high school, I joined the journalism club and wrote for the high school newspaper all 4 years and was a pretty accomplished student journalist. We had an incredible journalism program and the teacher there was just fantastic. Her standards were professional standards and we were expected to meet them. And she actually was the person who drove home to me the importance of the hook, mm-hmm. getting your reader hooked, keeping them hooked and pulling them through the story. Mm-hmm. And I realized a long time ago that I could take a version of what I learned in journalism class and apply it to short stories and novels. And as you've seen with this book, I think it worked.
Yeah. I was just reviewing that opening. I was just reviewing one more time that opening paragraph, those opening sentences, and you hook us immediately.
What is that? Well, yeah. What is the opening sentence again?
What is the opening sentence again? Shall I just read the opening sentence again? Okay, yeah. This is the opening sentence from Blood Follows Blood, Legend of Ginny Sutton. I knew Jim was dead because I killed him myself in a shootout near Skull Creek. Sweated till 12:30, scavenging everything useful and packing my saddlebags too. What I couldn't figure out was how he walked into my camp that evening with a bullet hole in his chest and buzzard feathers in his hair.
Hey, I get you, sentence.
Page one, sentence one, sentence two.
That's my style. I kept writing and, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
No, go ahead.
So after high school, I went to college and I kept writing. I took creative writing in college and took some poetry classes and things like that. And, you know, as it is the common story, life sort of happens and I put writing aside for a number of years. And then when my kids were big enough to make their own sandwiches and entertain themselves for a few hours, I decided maybe I could try the writing thing again. And so I started taking a creative writing class at a local technology center that we have here in my town. And it was so much fun that I took it, I think, 4 more times. And from that, the last class that I took, the students actually ended up forming a writing group and we published 3 books together. So that kind of was my stepping stone. And then after that, it 2020 rolled around, things were not right. You guys remember the whole year that we don't speak of.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, was I any good at this? Should I continue? Sort of having a bit of a crisis.
Yeah.
And so I found the Oklahoma Writers Federation has an annual writing contest. And so I entered the horror category and I won. And it gave me the confidence to keep going pretty much.
Yeah.
And so after that, I just kind of continued writing and submitting things. I found a conference that I go to annually in Colorado Springs called the Superstars Writing Seminar. It's fantastic. Mm. I'm going in a month. It'll be my 4th year going. And that's done a lot really to propel me. And I've just kind of, this story took a hold of me like a dog with a ham bone and I didn't have a choice. I had to write it. And so here we are. And that's the short version of how we got here.
Now, you refer to this story as an eerie Western or a weird Western. We're seeing in this genre now, we're seeing more and more authors that are kind of entering this world, which I absolutely love. Could you just take a moment and maybe, I don't know that there are major differences between weird Western, eerie Western, but could you even, speculative fiction, not everybody might even know what that means. And just give us a little, description of the books that appear in this kind of genre.
You bet. So speculative fiction is kind of an umbrella term that encompasses any fiction that has fantastical elements that you would not find in reality. So sci-fi would fall under that, fantasy would fall under that. And then underneath that, it's sort of like football brackets or sports brackets where you have your main header and then you have your brackets underneath and those are your subgenres. So weird Westerns you know, you could break it down actually into subgenres of weird Western. There are there's steampunk punk Western. Yeah. There's splatter Westerns.
Oh,
which is a lot of blood and gore and things like that. You know, there's what you might call paranormal Western, where you're just dealing strictly like with ghosts and things of that nature. So. But I think all of those things would fall under kind of a broad scope of weird Western. So weird Western is just generally a Western story that has fantastical elements of some kind. Mm-hmm. Mine happens to have all the fantastical elements that I could get. Yeah, it has them all. It has them all. There's a sliding scale on all of these things. So... And you can find something on your place in the spectrum. If you really prefer standard Western with no weird stuff, that's fine. That's down here. If you want, you know, Westerns with all the weird stuff, that's me over here. But there's something in between. So, you know, there's a lot of terms out there, and it can get confusing, and the subgenres can get a little gray and kind of overlap. So don't worry too much about trying to figure out what you want to, you know, specifically read or write. Just, you know, you can go to Amazon and just type in Western vampire book, and it will, if you want to read that, it'll give you options.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this one might come up.
This one might come up. You're right.
Oh yeah, because we do meet some of those.
Oh yeah, we do.
Yes, we do.
Yeah,
yes,
and you know, sneak peek in the book. Well, I'll tell you, in book two, she's got a big vampire problem. So
okay,
might want to stock up on those turtlenecks.
Yeah, well, I do have a wardrobe of them. What has called you to write within this genre?
You know, that's such a good question, and you asked me that when we spoke a couple of days ago, so I've had time to think about it. I never meant to write weird Westerns, but I think what happened was I found a space to create what I love. Mm-hmm. The number one advice that writers are given is to write what you know, write the book you want to read, those types of things. This is the book I would want to read. You know, I tried to go with the things that I know about life and put them in there. And it just felt like a comfortable space for me to tell the story I wanted to tell. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it took a hold of me, and I was just a conduit really for this story. I wrote the first three books of this series in about 18 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I started book four. Actually, I was going to bang on with book four, and I could feel myself edging towards burnout. I had started a new job actually right around the same time I started writing these books. And it's a fairly demanding job, but I really love it, and I'm glad to have it. And it was hard to balance the two things, but I put aside writing book four in favor of polishing book one, getting it out there, polishing book two, getting it out there. So once I get these three launched, which two and three will be coming this year, then I will go back. Yeah, I'll go back and get four.
Two and three coming this year. Ooh,
yeah, I'm editing book two now, and I'm about a quarter of the way through it. I really would like to have it out before I go to Superstars in February, ideally.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if that's going to happen. I have the cover art. My fantastic cover artist has already done everything. He just needs me to get the back copy to him, and that's done. So it's just waiting on me, really.
Yeah. Did you have a question?
We didn't want to miss anything, but then
we didn't talk about these, but
we're on the similes, right?
Yeah, let's hit on those because that's part of her process.
What are we doing, hon?
We are there are some comments that we hear Jenny make through the book, and one is about fine print.
So what, yeah, she learns in chapter one about that fine print, because, you know, Jim doesn't tell her all the details of why he's managed to come back from the dead. And as they say, the devil's in the details. So she learns quick, fast, and in a hurry that she had better get all the little details, every little nuance, every little bit and piece, because otherwise she's going to get tripped up. She learns that right away. Yeah. And it's a theme. I mean, that's kind of how I am. I really would like to know. It's not going to happen. Life doesn't really work that way. You're not ever going to know every little bit and piece and nuance of every situation. But ideally, I would like to know as much as possible about things. So, you know, that's me through and through. I want to know what's going on.
And we see her not get sharper is not really the thing, but learning about the fine print, she also kind of begins to learn. I got to ask that every time I might find myself in a negotiation of some kind. And we really see it much, much later in the book when she's with Queen Mab. And she has, Ginny has really caught the whole thing about fine print and reading between the lines and nailing it down. And I thought that was just interesting as she does develop as a character through the book. She's not just a super sort of woman hero at the onset. We see her as she moves her way through this epic adventure. And she also likes to say, and this is good warning for the reader, damn, double damn, and triple damn.
That's a real problem with her.
Bad, worse, much, much worse.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. The first drafts of all these books really were probably read more conversationally than they do as a novel. Mm-hmm. Because, and, you know, you had asked me why I wrote them in first person.
Yes. And that's another question. Yes.
It's more immediate. I like the first person aspect of it, but also in a way it's easier to hide kind of the twists and turns that are coming, because Ginny only knows what she knows when she knows it. And these books are her telling her story. And as you would tell your story to a friend, you don't give them every little, you foreshadow things even when you're telling stories to your friends. And so she doesn't give away everything, even in the retelling. And so it makes it more chronological in that way, I think. So it reads more of, you know, an adventure as it does, you know, someone telling you what they did. But that's why I picked first person, because I like the immediacy of it. And I like being in Ginny's head and seeing how she's thinking about things. And so that's where the dam and the double dam came from, is just, that's her thought, her thinking to herself, oh, damn.
Yep.
Well, you know, she also had a little philosophy about hope is not a strategy.
I love that. Yeah. Hope is not a strategy.
It is very important. Hope might be one of the most important things that there is. Yeah. Hope and love. And the greatest of these is.
But she makes a very good point all the time. But, oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
Well, she makes a good point all the time that she says hope is not a strategy. It's good to have hope, but I think she said we got to have a plan here besides waiting.
Yeah. You know, hope, you know, churns no butter. You don't get anything from hoping. You have to do something, or you're just dreaming while you're awake. So hope is great. Hope is necessary. It's vital, but it's not a strategy to changing your life or getting anything done. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she's realizing this throughout the book, because she has been stuck in a very dark place for a very long time. And the beginning of this book is her coming out of that and coming to terms with a lot of the pain that she's been dealing with.
Yeah. We are going to step away for just a moment, and then when we come back, we'll be taking a deep dive into Blood Follows Blood, and we will be treated to Julie actually reading a passage from the book. Yeah. But first, here is a word about two of our sponsors that make Rendezvous with a Writer possible. And if you are a writer, find out what our friends Krista Sukup of Blue Cottage Agency and Janelle Madison of Clicks by Madison can do for you. Julie reads, when we come back, don't stray away. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Running with a Writer. Special guest, Julie Jones. And this book with a red cover, Blood Follows Blood.
What a story.
You know, Julie is just about to read a little bit of the book.
Julie's going to read for us, to us.
How exciting.
Yeah.
So we talked, when we spoke on Monday, we had talked about the story out of Oregon, about the unfortunate incident with the gentlemen who were Bigfoot hunting. And Bigfoot appears quite a bit in this book. A bit of an unsung hero, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. But in those days, this takes place in the late 1800s in Colorado. And Sasquatch, Bigfoot, those were not names that were used at that time for what we call those potential cryptids. I guess we'll just call them cryptids. So in the book, he's called Wild Man. So this is from the towards the beginning of the book. It's about, I think, the second time that she encounters the Wild Man. Gray moved toward gold in the eastern sky when I woke for the day. A handful of coals remained under their bank of ashes, but it was enough to warm my last wedge of cornbread. While it heated, I packed and took the horse to drink. The Wild Man didn't appear, though I watched the far bank with eagle eyes. I pulled the cornbread off the heat and stomped out the coals. While I chewed, I searched for Jim's tracks. I'd left him floundering under the collapsed and burned tent, so I concentrated my effort around there and found what I wanted. The tall grass was bent and the dirt scraped from a body dragging across. The marks led to the creek. Mounted, I guided the horse to where the drag marks joined the water. Nothing on the other side showed where he'd crawled back out. I ranged down a half mile, then doubled back past the camp and traveled upstream. Neither hide nor hair. I reckoned he floated downstream. He'd make better time than crawling over land. The water was only knee deep, but that was plenty for moving a body. Pretty crafty for old Jim. The camp lay ahead around a bend on my left. I intended to pass by one final time and never think of it again, but the Wild Man stood on a sloping bank next to Jim's trail. Scattered amongst the fire's ashes were the filthy torn rags that remained of the tent. Strangely, my horse whickered and danced a few steps, but showed no other alarm. I halted in the middle of the creek, less than 30 feet from the Wild Man. The rising sun picked up gold and red highlights in its brown fur, and its amber eyes studied me with keen interest. Too early for most birds, the loudest sound was water swirling around my horse's legs. The Wild Man flared its nostrils and inhaled deeply. It swung his head as if smelling the campsite and Jim's slithering trail into the water. Then made a strange gesture and bared its teeth. I gathered it objected to Jim's scent. I waited, unsure. Then it pointed. There was no denying its clear communication. The Wild Man pointed at Jim's scrapes and dragged its finger along the bank to aim downstream. From horseback, I sat eye level with the Wild Man and gave it a solemn nod in hopes it understood. I rode away, daring to give it my back. I wagered it wouldn't attack, and it didn't. When I dared to look, it was gone. I shook off my chills and set to watching the banks for signs of Jim's exit.
Yeah.
The Wild Man. Oh, goodness. We're talking with our author guest tonight, Julie Jones, and that was a passage from Blood Follows Blood, The Legend of Jenny Sutton. Oh, it was so good.
Let me ask a question about the cover.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you have a special artist that works that does this work for you.
I tell you what, so if you can't, best advice I can give you is to make friends with a graphic artist 20 years ago. I was lucky enough 20 years ago to work at a company that it was a large format print shop, and they printed a lot of decals and did a lot of art and logos for companies and things like that. And the staff graphic artist was a man named Steve Clark, and we became friends. We've remained friends. His wife is one of my, we were at their house this weekend for a Christmas party, as a matter of fact. He is so talented. He's got a specific style that I really love. He really is terrific with the vintage kind of pulp style. And that's exactly what I wanted for these books. So I knew when the book was ready exactly who I wanted to hire. So I reached out to him and asked him if he would be interested in doing the covers for me. He said, absolutely. You know, I got a friend deal. You're not going to get this deal for this kind of art. Sorry.
I'm holding it up again. Jim is asking me to hold it up again.
Well, yeah, I'm interested because I'm very interested in how we depicted Jenny. And I look at, and of course, we have this guy in the background.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking the way he was drawn and painted, or you know, how we ended up with him there, was that your idea or was that Steve's idea?
You know, I gave him a broad idea of what I wanted. Honestly, the only specific thing I can remember telling him that I wanted was her hat. I was very specific about what I wanted her hat to look like. And the rest of it, I was like, do what you will, because I love your style. I did give him, he did ask me for like some kind of basic character descriptions. So I sent him one of Jenny and one, which I don't just over describe her in the books.
No, you don't. No,
you don't.
Because I prefer the reader to sort of imagine her however they would like. I'm not set on any specific. And honestly, the on book two's cover, which I have, and if you were a newsletter subscriber, you would have seen already.
I think I have signed up. I think I did sign up for your newsletter. I'll check.
Oh, double check. I'm not sure if you did.
I will.
You may have, and maybe it was after I sent the book cover. It's been a couple of months since I sent the book cover out, but Jenny doesn't look really the same on book two's cover as she does on book one. And I'm fine with that. It's booked. The cover for book two is amazing.
We'll go check into that, Julie.
Check it out. I'll probably do a cover reveal for it on my social media in the next couple of weeks, especially if I'm gonna be able to get book two out really soon. But I could not be more blessed as far as a cover artist goes. And actually an editor for that matter, Erica Copeland, my editor, I met her. She was in my writing group with me that I met through the tech center, and she's fabulous. I couldn't ask for a better one.
It's a team. You've got a team.
Yep.
What was sort of the inspiration behind the book?
Well, so what happened is and I actually found the date for this scribbled in a notebook just a couple of weeks ago. It was March 2022. I found an anthology call online for weird Western stories. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting. I've never written that before. And I was looking for something new to do. I was kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to write, because as we mentioned earlier, speculative fiction is a very broad term. And I still hadn't quite nailed down where on that spectrum I wanted my writing to be. And so I thought, well, this weird Western thing sounds kind of fun. So I wrote a story. I had an idea. I wrote a story. I sent it in. It got rejected, as expected, was totally fine. But the editor said, try again, which I thought was really nice. But in the meantime, Jenny was in my ear telling me everything that she was doing. And I finally kind of reverted back to my journalism training and started asking her questions. Who, what, where, when, why, how. Yeah. And, I just sort of started writing things down and connecting dots. And then eventually I had to admit to myself that this idea was not going to go away and it needed written. And that was that. I was off to the races. I wrote three books in 18 months and here we are. And it's the most fun I've ever had.
That's great.
Is she still talking to you?
All the time.
All the time.
All the time. All the time. And she gets aggravated with me when I'm editing because she will say something that contradicts something else later in the book. And I'll ask her why she said that and she'll argue with me about it.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Does she,
I don't know where she would get something like that.
Had she ever like made you, or really encourage you to rewrite something because that just, you know, did Jenny just say that is not me or I wouldn't have done that or come on, you know, you can write that scene better. Or, you know, did she, is she like your editor?
Well, there's been a couple of times where I have typed a piece of dialogue and she has been like, no, I didn't say that. Okay. And I'll back it off. Every writer knows that you have to be able to kill your darlings. You might be in love with a sentence or a paragraph or an entire scene, and it just doesn't work for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to cut that for the good of the whole. So I'm fairly ruthless. I cut a sentence night before last that I was like, oh, I really like this sentence, but it doesn't go here. So it just has to be done, you know?
Yeah.
It's like doing surgery.
It sounds like it also, you have to be true. Yeah. As the writer, you have to be true to the characters or the what's going on in the scene. You have to stay true. So yeah. It sounds like she really insists that you stay true.
She's a very strong character. You know, it's kind of funny. It's almost like, you know, I described her to somebody as very Athenian in that, you know, the old Greek mythology of Athena just sprang from Zeus's forehead, fully formed, fully clothed, ready for battle. And that's kind of how she showed up in my head. She just was there. And I would ask her questions about her past. What are you doing next? Why did you do that? She had an answer for everything. So, you know, sometimes the muse just gives you the story and you're the conduit. Mm-hmm. And that's what has happened with me with this particular book series. And I'll tell you something, at the Western Writers Conference of America in June, where I met you guys, I had an idea. I have a trunked novel that I wrote about 5 years ago that I've just never been able to figure out what to do with it. And I had an epiphany at WWA for retooling it into a offshoot series of this series.
Fun.
So I'm pretty excited about that, but that's down the road.
Yeah. Jim, do you want to ask anything from up in here? Up here?
We're right along.
Did I get us off track, guys?
No,
this is fine.
I'm so sorry for my cough.
You know, we have a section where we talk about the characters, but let's just talk about Jenny for a minute. Jenny Sutton.
Is it
Clementine?
She has a lot of aliases.
Georgia Bennett, or is it Penny? or
Yeah, she has a lot of aliases, doesn't she?
She's what fond of aliases.
Strong, yeah, what is this strong word all about?
here's the irony. The irony is that she has all of these aliases, but she really could not pick a name for her horse and just named it Horse.
Just named it Horse.
That's right, she did.
Yeah. Now, there had to be some. Did you have to do any kind of research? I mean, my feeling is, as I read, that you've got all the correct things about, you know, how you set up a camp or how you cook coffee or how you get tack on a horse or what kind of firearms. It feels like, you know, I wouldn't be able to say, she's got that wrong. But was there any kind of research that you felt you had to do to just be sure that you did, you know, nail down everything correctly?
Yeah, I double checked quite a bit of stuff, even if it was something that I felt like I was pretty spot on right about. You know, some of that is personal experience. You know, my family raised rabbits. We ate a lot of rabbit when I was growing up. And so I do know how to dress a rabbit and things like that. I worked at a hunter check station years ago, and I know about dressing out a deer. I've worked at a gun store, so I know about firearms. So I just happen to have a lot of experience in a lot of different areas that sort of prepared me to at least have a base knowledge for things.
Yeah.
And anything I didn't know, I really did try to make sure that I got it as accurate as I could. I'm sure that a purist could go through this book and probably be like, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. that's, and you know, I'm one thing that, and we talked about this before, in no way, shape, or form are these books meant to parody traditional Westerns. In no way, shape, or form are they meant to belittle or besmirch or put down. They're an homage. It's the idealized American West is our mythos. That's ours. That's where Americans get our myths. We have our tall tales and our heroes, and we need to be embracing those and putting them. And it just, to me, makes sense to blend them with, you know, things that have come before and create a bridge. You know, there's always going to be room for traditional Westerns. I think that weird Westerns make a nice little bridge for people who have only ever read fantasy or sci-fi to come over and read Westerns.
Yeah.
And the other way too, you know, if you've only ever read traditional Westerns and you would be interested in something like this, you know, maybe my books are something to work up to, but there's definitely, you know, books out there that introduce weird elements, speculative elements at a gentler, you know, lower level that you can kind of cut your teeth on and see if it's something you even like.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like the bridge building aspect of it. And you know, I just, it's what I love. So.
Well, yeah, it's a great story. And you tied in all these different elements so well. And adventure, I mean, this poor lady, she hardly gets an hour's sleep before the next barrage is coming after her.
It is a lot. It is a lot. And, you know, before anyone is afraid, is scared off of it, let me just say, I worked really hard to structure this book in a way where each chapter is almost its own little short story.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That's true.
It's definitely one long cohesive story. Absolutely. And you'd definitely get a satisfying ending, but because I knew as I was writing it, that it was a lot. I purposely structured the book that way so that, you know, binge readers would have a great time, but people who needed a place to stop could finish a chapter and
that
stop.
Too. Yeah, that too.
Well, and as readers, you do take us, Ginny takes us on a very fast moving, these stories, very fast moving, and we might forget to breathe, maybe. So when that story completes and she's able to kind of take a rest, if you will, she's always got to have sort of one eye open, but you know, we appreciate that as a reader, because it's like, oh, okay, you know, and then she's off and, you know, she's off and running, and we have to, you know, be prepared to be following her. we're going to take a very short break. And when we come back, we want to talk a little bit about a few of the incidences that she finds herself in, and maybe a little bit more about specific characters. So don't go away. This is an ad spot for OutWestShop.com, another one of our sponsors. And when we come back, we are getting into this epic odyssey. Stay tuned.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back. You're on with the writer. We have special guest, Julie Jones, and we're talking about this book, Blood Follows Blood.
Oh my gosh. So Julie, when I was just kind of getting, you know, into it and reading it and going through, like, okay, here's the first entanglement she gets involved in. Oh, here's another one. And then I began to feel like, I think this is like the Odyssey. I feel like I'm with Odysseus on his way home from the Trojan War. And we're just running into one.
It's not like that.
Yeah, we're just running into one unbelievable entanglement after another. And that would be really fun. We don't want spoiler alerts, but we just love to give the listeners a little bit of an idea. We've talked about the wild man. But is there just one or two others that you'd just like to, you know, tell us? Yeah, tell us about.
Well, I tell you, if you want to compare my book to a classic piece of literature, I will not object to that. We have Jenny. This book really has a great cast of characters. So there's the Sinful Six, obviously. They were conscripted by the devil from the Mad Dogs. The Mad Dogs are a gang of bad guys. If you've seen the movie Tombstone, think the Cowboys from that movie. So that's the Mad Dogs. And, you know, in Jenny's adventures, she meets all kinds of people and creatures and scenarios. You know, she meets naiads and they help her. They send her on a side quest and then they help her with other things. And she has friends at the Circus Fantastica that she goes to visit and they help her track down one of the Sinful Six. And, you know, she has run-ins with ghost soldiers and kidnapped children who are about to be eaten by a witch and vampires and werewolves. And, you know, it sounds a little kitchen sinky, but I promise that everything makes sense and the story progresses logically. But yeah, it's really kind of about her coming to understand that the world is much wider than she ever thought, and that there is room for her in it, and that if she can just figure out how to live in it, there's wonders around every corner. Mm-hmm. And that's really the lesson I've learned in my life, is that, you know, bad things happen, but there's a lot of good out there, and there's things you can't even imagine waiting for you.
Yeah. Did you have, it looked like you were getting ready to ask something.
You know, so many characters, what are you talking about? You know, they slip up on you as a reader. You think, oh my goodness, who thought about that? But you know what? When the mermaids came about.
The mermaids.
Yeah.
The mermaid. Oh my goodness. I thought, what am I reading? Oh my gosh. Oh, it's the mermaid. And then I did foreshadow what the main mermaid was going to ask her to do. But yeah, so fun to have suddenly, you know, mermaids in the Western story. And we go into the land that Queen Mab is, that sort of fairy enchanted land. So and the next time, listeners, you find yourself in a mine and you're taking that mine tour, keep your eye open, for there may be a gate that would take you into another enchanted passage.
You know, I did not mention this, but earlier when we were talking about the short story that I wrote that inspired the books, that the short story that was rejected eventually became chapter 4 of book 1. And that is the chapter about the giant bugs. If you're squeamish about bugs, just chapter 4.
You know, she knows no fear.
No, I don't. It's all on the table.
She knows no fear, and she will run, you know, to it. There's the scene on, is it Cry Baby Bridge? What's the name of the right name of the bridge? Cry Baby Bridge.
Ma'am.
And, you know, she hears these stories. Oh, no, you don't want to go. You know, nobody makes it across. And she's like, you know, but that's it. I got to get that way. And so she's never put off by the reputation that things have. She just like, no, there's got it. I'll figure it out. And of course, that's where the werewolves are, right? Is that where the werewolves are? Yeah.
Hope is not a strategy. She needs across the bridge, and hope is not going to get her across the bridge. That's a fun one to write too, because, you know, I think every little small town in America has a crybaby bridge, and they all have a different story associated with them. And so I wanted to put in Crybaby Bridge, but I needed something different, right? And so I thought, well, what could be under the bridge that we could put this story in? So that's kind of how that
Isn't there a fairy tale with crossing the bridge and there's like little trolls or there's a nasty gnome or something?
Yeah, the three billy goats
gruff. I had not even made that connection when I read about that in the book. Oh my gosh, Julie, I can't believe what time I see it's at. Oh my goodness, we're
moving along.
We're almost running out of time. Oh my gosh. So Julie, tell us, we don't want to miss on how we find you, where people can buy your book, and again, a little recap of what's coming up next.
Yes. So I have a website. It is juliejones.net. That's where you can sign up for my newsletter.
Yeah, I'm going right there when we get off. I think I've done it, but I don't want to miss it now.
Yeah, newsletter subscribers get all the early stuff. It's only once a month. I promise I will not bug you. It's once a month and then maybe new release stuff. And every newsletter ends with a picture of my dog and she's adorable. and then on Facebook, you can find me at Julie Jones Writer. And on Instagram, I'm at J Jones Writer.
Very good. Jim, do you have a quote or two?
We have quotes.
I think I'm looking at, there's a little clock up here on the left I'm staring at.
Let's see, we got these.
You don't you have? Hold on. Here. I got them. Yeah, you got them. We had too many pages tonight.
They're hidden under the bio. Well, this is going to follow up a companion to your reading passage. We have a description of the wild man.
A little bit more.
Ooh. A horrifying, inhuman screech sliced the air from a nearby stand of trees. Everyone froze. The pungent odor of skunk and swamp water whirled through camp, thick enough to stink a dog off a gut wagon. A few outlaws gagged at the smell, and Jim pinched his nose shut. That gives me attention, you know?
These are the other. Do you have the other?
Yeah,
two?
I got it.
Okay. We're good.
We had to put this one in here because this is a lady we call Poker Alice. And she's setting up a card game. And she says, "Praise the Lord and place your bets. I'll take your money with no regrets." Yeah, that's very good.
That's very fun. and then you have another one on that page.
Fun fact about the Poker Alice one. Poker Alice is the only person in this book that was an actual real person who actually lived in the Old West. And that is a real thing that she used to say at the
Poker Alice. That's so fun.
Yep. Oh, that'd be great.
Okay, you have time for one more.
Jenny, our hero here, is talking about the man she just shot. It was a man, hunched over and wearing the same rags as a skulking hobo I had seen in town earlier. Long, coarse hair covered the wretch from head to toe. Yellow eyes gleamed with feral hate. Long, broken teeth snapped as he labored to breathe, and he growled as we stood over him. My aim was truer than ever, and his claw-like fingers tried to stanch the three bullet wounds over his heart. Blood spilled between them and pooled on the oak planks. My brain finally figured it out. A werewolf.
We've been talking with our featured guest author tonight, Julie Jones, who is still on screen with us. But we're going to take a moment to thank you all for listening and for watching. We're going to thank Clicks by Madison and Blue Cottage Agency for their ongoing support, and Sam Hassan for the excellent job that he does with this show. I'm going to announce that next week we have actually three people with us. Henry Park, the film editor for True West Magazine, returns kind of at the special request of the two authors, Bill Markley and Kellen Cutsforth, that we met at the WWA. And they have written together two books, Old West Showdown, Two Authors Wrangle Over the Truth About the Mythic Old West. And they also together wrote Stand Off at High Noon. And what these two good friends and authors, co-authors, love to do is argue about who's right. What was the real story? Let's get to the bottom. Let's get to the facts. And so they are very excited to be with us next week. And it'll be kind of a little new for us. And we're looking forward to it. So do join us next week. Same time, same station. And I guess, Julie, I think we're out of time.
We want to thank
you. That is a shame. I have loved talking to you guys. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Very good. And as we say to all our listeners and readers and watchers, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing, and we'll keep reading. We'll see you down the trail. Bye.